Good evening, gentlemen. It's nice to be back after a little bit of a hiatus. We are going to be continuing with Yud Amud Beis in Ksubas. But before we do, I just wanted to share with you an idea I heard once relating to Pesach, which is the next Yom Tov on the calendar. A very interesting idea. Essentially, the idea is shown from a piece in Sefer HaChinuch. Sefer HaChinuch is a mitzvah which lists all the is a sefer which lists all the mitzvos, and when it comes to Pesach, mitzvos 5 through 17, it's towards the beginning of Sefer HaChinuch, mitzvos 5 through 17 all discuss various specifics, various details that have to be observed when eating the Karban Pesach, and there are more mitzvos of Pesach even after that. And when the Sefer HaChinuch is discussing the reasons behind these mitzvos, he mentions that each and every one is in order to help us to remember the miracle of Hashem taking us out of Egypt. And he says himself, and don't ask why do we have so many mitzvot simply to help us remember the miracle of going out of Egypt, because that's sort of a silly question, he says, because everybody knows, it's a well-known concept, that a person is affected in accordance with his actions. And he goes on to explain why that makes sense, because the more a person does, which is good, even if in his heart of hearts he's a rasha, but he's doing things which are good outwardly, that will eventually cause him to, in his heart of hearts, be a good person. And the same is true vice versa. A person who in his heart of hearts wants to do the right thing, but for whatever reason is doing outwardly acts of wickedness, will eventually come to be a wicked person, and even internally. So the person I heard this idea from essentially pointed out, how did the Sefer HaChinuch answer his question? His question, it's sort of, you know, apples and oranges. His question is talking about, why do we need more than one mitzvah to help us remember the miracle of going out of Egypt? And his answer was, because a person is affected in accordance with his actions. So it seems, from this Sefer HaChinuch, from this piece that he writes, that the more mitzvahs that we do to commemorate the going out of Egypt, the better we are able to connect to it and to relate to it, and therefore to remember this miracle that God did for us and to connect to it. It still seems a little bit funny, but what apparently comes out from the Sefer HaChinuch is the idea that we do have the ability to connect to this miracle that God did for us, this thing which happened so many thousands of years ago. It would almost seem to us to be so out there. Intellectually we may know what it is, but emotionally, to create a real connection in ourselves to that incident which happened so long ago, it would almost seem impossible. But the Sefer HaChinuch is giving us a nice insight into how we can do that, which is the idea that we're affected by our actions, and the more we do when those actions are specifically for the purpose of helping us to connect to that miracle that happened so many years ago, the more able we are to really feel it. To really feel how fortunate we are that we're not slaves anymore. To feel how fortunate we are that God chose us from all the nations and took us out of slavery and gave us the Torah. All of that is something that we can connect to. And another interesting insight that we see from the Sefer HaChinuch is the idea that a person, even one who's very wicked, can still be affected by his own actions, even if he, for whatever reason, he's not doing it because he wants to become a better person. He's doing it because, let's say, somebody's paying him, even, to do the right thing. I'll give you $1 every time you do the right thing. You know, you record your actions in a little notebook, and you hand in your notebook to the person. At the end, he's going to give you however many dollars you've earned, for however many times you did the right thing. Nevertheless, those actions affect you. They affect us so much that they can make a person, change a person, to be something that he wasn't. And to become something that he, whether he wants to be or not, he will be. Which is essentially a person who does what God wants. And in other words, a good person. And just a further idea we see from the Sefer HaChinuch is that even after his answer, it still seems a little funny, 12 mitzvah seems to be somewhat overkill. And the piece that he happens to write this in is discussing the mitzvah of not being able to break a bone when eating the Karban Pesach. There are bones, obviously, in the lamb that was slaughtered and then roasted. One is not allowed to break those bones when eating the lamb. It would seem especially as it's the 12th mitzvah in a sequence of mitzvahs, all detailing how the Korban Pesach has to be eaten, and every single one in order to help us commemorate, you'd think at a certain point you're saturated with connection to the miracle. You're done. This is all you can possibly relate to it. You see from the Sefer HaChinuch that every extra nuance, every extra little bit that we do above and beyond what we've already done aids and helps us connect more to the miracle and affects us and changes us more into a person who does the right thing, who does God's will, who connects to miracles, who connects to what God has done for us, who can appreciate even more what God did for us by this extra action of not breaking a bone because God told you to do it in order to commemorate that miracle that happened. It's really almost mind-boggling to think about how much of a difference every little action that we do makes on our own selves. Every little action that we do changes us. And even though the amount of impact that each action on its own makes may not be significant, when added together, the sum total is really quite significant and can create a person who is different than anything he ever thought he would be. Just something to think about as we go into Pesach. Without further ado, Daf Yoreh Mabeis in Maseches Ksuvos. The Gemara was discussing various incidents where, after all is said and done, after all the halachos about a man coming to Bezdin to say a claim that his wife, who he thought was a besula, turns out is not, is actually not a virgin, and of course the man is not happy about this, and he perhaps doesn't want to have to give the ksuba, and he's perhaps concerned that he's not allowed to live with his wife anymore, which if she had adultery and was with another man after they had already done kiddushin, after they had been betrothed, he might actually not be able to be with his wife anymore and would have to divorce her. And perhaps she forfeits her ksuba, and that's an argument which we're going to get involved in actually in the coming blot. But in the here and now, however, the Gemara is discussing various times that a man actually came to Beit Din and what the reactions were of those judges, those sages, in front of whom the man and woman presented their case. And although the halacha in so many instances may be that the man is believed and he is in fact able to cost the woman her ksuba, or does in fact have the ability to create an isser between him and her and therefore create a need for divorce, in many instances the rabbis had ways of looking into it and checking into it and using their own seichel as the situation dictated and called for it to affect the psak other than divorce or the woman losing out on her ksuba as the situation dictated. So let's take a look at these some more of these incidents. The Gemara already related a few. The Gemara now continues with some more. The second line, the last one on the line is Hahu. The Gemara says, Hahu de also the kamei de Rabban Gamliel ben Rebbe. The person who came in front of Rabban Gamliel, Amarle, he said to him, Rebbe, my master, Balti, I was with my wife, v'lo matzasi dam, and no blood came out. I did not find any dam. Amarle, she said to him, the woman, the wife, Rebbe, adayim besula ani, I'm still a besula. Amarle, and he said to them, Heviu lishtei shvachos, bring me two maidservants, achas besula v'achas beula, one who is a virgin and one who is not. Hevilo, they brought them to him. V'hoshivan al pichavet shayayin, and he placed them, he sat them on top of an open barrel of wine. Beula reicha nodev, the beula, the one who was not a virgin, the smell of the wine came out, and we're going to see in Rashi means through her mouth. Besula ein reicha nodev, by the virgin, the smell did not come through. Avzu, so to this one, this girl who there was some doubt about, Hoshiva, he sat her on the barrel, v'lo hayarecha nodif, and the smell did not come out. So Amar lo, Rav Gamliel said to this man, lech zacha b'makekcha, go and be meritorious, or own, go and acquire your purchase. In other words, go take ownership of your purchase because there's nothing, no reason to be concerned that it's anything other than what you thought you purchased, which was, in this instance, a virgin. And of course, the word purchased is obviously in the context of marriage being a purchase. The Gemara then asks as follows. V'nivdok me'ikar v'gavah. So why did he not check initially by her that why did he have to go and get two maidservants? Why not just check with her directly? So Gemara Havashmiele, he had heard, it was a tradition that he had heard about, Maisa lo havachazi. He had never seen it done in person. V'savar dama lo kimle begava. And he thought, V'savar dama lo kimle begava. And he thought that perhaps this man is not sure about his wife. Dama lo kimle begava d'milsa shapir. Maybe the matter is not going to do a good job of checking out whether or not she's a besula or not. It's not nice to embarrass or to demean Benos Yisrael. In other words, he wasn't going to have this girl sit on an open barrel of wine in a way that would enable him to determine whether or not she's a virgin, in other words, whether or not her hymen is broken, unless he was sure it was actually going to work. Let us take a look at Rashi. Recha notev mipiha. The smell was coming out of her mouth. So he was able to smell the smell of the wine through, by way of that Pesach Pesuach, by way of the hymen being broken, through there came out of her mouth. Which is again something that is mind-boggling to me. I do not know what modern science would say about such a thing. But this is a story that happened with Rav Gamliel. Gemara Havashmiele says Rashi, She'asu kein livnos yavesh gilad v'mesachas yivamos. He had heard a tradition about this idea working because it's brought down in the Gemara Yivamos that they did such a thing in Tanakh by Vinos yavesh gilad. Okay, so let's take a look back at the Gemara now at the next incident they're going to bring down. Hahu da'asa l'kami di Rav Gamliel. That man who came in front of Rav Gamliel, Hazaken, who was the older Rav Gamliel, the first, Amarlo, he said to him, Rabbi Bivaldi Vlomas Hasidam, I was with my wife and did not find any blood. Amarlo, she said to him, Rabbi Bimishbachas Dorkti Ani, Shein Lahem Lodam Nidav Lodam Basulin. I'm from the family whose name is Dorkti, that they do not have any blood, any. Any blood of Nida and no blood that it comes from the hymen. So Badak Rav Gamliel b'Krovos, Rav Gamliel checked into her relatives, Umata Kidvareha, and he found like her words. He found in fact that it was the truth that she was from that family. Amarlo, so he said to him, Lech Azachah b'Makecha, go and acquire your take ownership of your purchase. Ashrecha, you are praiseworthy. Shezachisa l'mishpachas darkti. That you were able to merit the family of Dorkti. And now the Gemara gives a little interjection. My Dorkti. What does Dorkti mean? Dorkatua, the generation that is cut off. So this interjection is a little bit funny. It makes a little bit more sense when we see the next line of the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Chanina said, Rav Gamliel gave poor comfort to the man who was complaining. The Tani Rebbe Chia, because Rebbe Chia taught, Kishem Shahas Seor Yafali, he said, just like yeast is helpful, beneficial to dough, Kachdam Yafal Neisha, so too is blood beneficial to a woman. The Tana Mishim Rameir, and they taught in the name of Rameir, Kol Isha Shishdamel Merubin Banam Merubin. Any woman who has a lot of blood, she will have many sons. Says Rashi, Dorkatua, she'ein lahem lo dam nidav lo dam besulim. So Rashi explains the word katua in this case means a generation that is cut off. It doesn't mean literally like a, as if to say that they're cut off and they aren't able to procreate, but that they're literally cut off. They don't have any blood of this type. Rashi says, yafin li'isha l'maher l'hayrayon, to hurry her to be pregnant. So the Gemara now continues along the same thread. They say Itmar. It was stated, Rabbi Yirmi Yabar Abba Amar Zachav Makecha. Rabbi Yirmi Yabar Abba said, go take ownership of your purchase. Amar Rabbi Yosi Bar Abba and Amar Nischayv Makecha. But didn't Rabbi Yosi Bar Abba say in such a case? And again, it's very much implied in the Gemara. We're still talking about that family of Dorkti, that another rabbi had said Nischayv Makecha, that also a language which indicates taking ownership of your possession, but of your purchase, but it means it in a negative way, that you are now sort of detrimentally taking your purchase. So Omerle, he said to him, Bishlam Alaman Dharma Nischayev. It makes sense if you say the language that was used was Nischayev, this idea of detrimentally taking a possession of something. Hayne de Rav Chanina. That's like Rav Chanina, who we quoted earlier, who said that by the family of Dorkti, they're not going to have so many children because of the fact that they don't have this special thing of dam yafin leisha, that they have blood is beneficial to a woman. They don't have that. What's chus would it be to marry into the family of Dorkti? They're not going to have dam nida, and then they're not going to be able to have children. So the Gemara answers, the lo'asi lidei safek nida, that they shouldn't come to any doubt of nida. We know that nida is a very serious isser in the Torah, and if a woman never has any period, there's never going to be any doubts about that isser. Now this answer of the Gemara is a little bit strange, because one would think that if a person is marrying someone who's not going to be able to have children, the advantage of not coming to any doubts of Dam Nida, which the reality is most, the overwhelming majority of wives will have a period, and therefore will have some questions about Dam Nida, and still there are halachos, and Baruch Hashem, there's a halacha to guide us about how to conduct oneself in various types of doubts of that sort. Nevertheless, you'd think, so especially as that is the case, children would be better. Well, what's the great advantage? It seems like even so, even if granted that given a choice, one would choose having the children and the dam nida safek, the safek of perhaps whatever halachic doubts may arise, there's still some advantage, even if being unable to have children or as many children, to that avoiding the halachic doubt. And again, it's not clear if Dorothy, obviously, there's a whole family of them that it was known that they did not have blood, that obviously it was the family that didn't have trouble procreating. It's sort of like the obvious comment that was made, that infertility is not hereditary, because you can't pass on an inability to have children to your children. Okay. Going further in the Gemara, Hahuda also lekame de Rebbe. That man who came in front of Rebbe, Amarle, he said to him, Rebbe ba'alti v'lo matzasi dam. I was together with my wife and there was no blood. Amarle, she said to him, Rebbe adayim besulah, you see, I was still a besulah up until that point. I don't know why there was no blood. She was, in other words, she's effectually saying, whatever he's claiming against me that I was not a virgin is untrue. I was. Ushnei betzoras hava. And at the time it was a famine. There's a famine in the land. Ra'a Rebbe shepneim shechorim. Rebbe saw, Rebbe, the great Rebbe, Rebbe Yehuda Anasi, saw that their faces were black. Siva aleihen, he commanded upon them, he commanded that what should be done with them is the chnisum l'merchas, that they should be brought into a bathhouse, the ha'achilum, they should be fed, the hishkum, and given something to drink, the chnisum l'cheder, and then put into a room together. Baal, he then was together with her, umasadam, and he found blood. Amarlo, he said to him, lech azachal makekcha, go and meritoriously take ownership of your possession. Kari Rebbe Aleim, and Rebbe said about them, Sefed Oram al Atmam Yavesh Hayakaids. Their skin stuck to their flesh, it was dry like wood. Apparently, this is a pasuk that was referring to an Echa that says, talks about if you're victims of famine or siege that happened in during the time of the Roman conquest of Israel. And Rebbe felt that it was appropriate here that these famine victims, their bodies were so dried up and so lacking nourishment that they weren't able to follow through with their proper functioning, hers especially, until she was given something to eat and drink and so on. Okay, let's take a look at the Mishnah. This is where the real meat and potatoes of this Amud is going to come into play, and we'll see where it takes us. Matnisin, Besulok, Subasa, Masayim, a virgin has a standard ksuba of 200, ra'amana mana, and a widow has a standard ksuba of 100. Vesula almano grusha v'chalutza min ha'erison. A woman who is a virgin but is a widow or a divorcee or a woman who had chalitza done to her but was only betrothed to her husband, was not actually married, ksubasa masayim. Their ksuba is 200. V'yeshla in tainas besulim, and they do have a claim of besulim. So what exactly is the second case in the Mishnah? The first case seems pretty straightforward. If a man marries a woman and she is a virgin, then he has to give her 200 if he divorces her. And if a woman is a widow and a man marries her and then he divorces her, he would have to give her 100. What is this other case? Let us say a man is engaged to a woman. They're on betrothed, but they don't get as far as actually getting married, as doing the nisuin. And then one of three things happens. Either he dies, and even in the instance of his death, he dies but he has no brothers, in which case there's no mitzvah of yibum that comes into play. In English, levirate marriage, which is, there's a mitzvah of the Torah, that if a man dies with no children and leaves a wife behind, his brother has an obligation to marry his widow. So if he was betrothed, but he left behind no brothers, then she's simply a widow who is now only a widow from Kedushin, and now she gets married to another person. What is the standardized ksuba in that case? Or if he was betrothed to her and he divorced her, or if he was betrothed to her and then he died but left behind a brother and had no children of his own from previous marriage, then that brother had an obligation to either do yivam or chalitza. If he does chalitza, then she has a similar status to a divorcee, but again, she was never married. She had kedushin done, but she was never married. So then in that case, the ksuba that she gets is in fact 200. And what's more is that if now when this other person comes along and marries this woman who had this previous kedushin done, has some kind of claim that I thought she was a bezula, and it turns out that she's not, he is entitled to make such a claim, and all the usual ramifications of such claims will be in effect in that case as well. Let's see, Rashi. Rashi says, Besula almana ugrusha. Bain besula shehi almana, whether a besula who is either a widow, or grusha, or divorcee, or chalutza, or one who had chalitza done to her, mina erison, only from erison, only from kedushin. Because of Anisis, now she goes and gets married to someone else. Ksubasa v'nasheni, or ksuba from the second one, Masayim is 200 shari, becheskas besula yimisislo, that she is still in the presumed status of being a virgin. If the second one does not find it to be a besula of the kol ksuba, so she loses out her entire ksuba, the mekachtaos hilo. It is a what's called the mekachtaos, a mistaken purchase, and it has the status of a purchase which gets retroactively undone. And in an ordinary case, let's say Reuven sells something to Shimon, and it's a mekachtaos, Reuven gets his item back, Shimon gets his money back, and the sale is undone. So here also, essentially, the sale is undone, and she does not get her ksuba. Now, I don't know if the Gemara you're looking at, or if you're looking at a Gemara, but the Gemara that I have has a little notation by the word kol in Rashi, with a little number one. Now that number one tells you, it's next to the word kol, that there are some editions that do not have the word kol in their Rashi, and that's because, according to some opinions, as we're going to see, I believe on Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, and if not then, shortly thereafter, we will see, that there are some opinions who say that a woman who has Tainas Besulim, and who a claim is made against her virginity, even in such a case, assuming that the man is allowed to stay married to her and doesn't divorce her, she doesn't necessarily lose her entire ksuba, she may only lose half of it. She may be downgraded from a 200 ksuba to a 100 ksuba. So it could be that that is why some people take out that word from the Rashi, and some editions do not have it. However, Rashi does refer to it as a mekachtos, that it's a mistaken sale, which is the reasoning behind the opinion who holds that she loses the entire ksuba. So from that angle, it would make sense to have the word in Rashi. In any event, we will, whichever opinion Rashi himself is going, we'll see all the opinions within the next few blocks. Let's take a look at Tosfos. Tosfos on the top of the page says something interesting in terms of the reasoning behind why the Mishnah said the cases that they did. Tosfos says, "Besula almana grusha chalutza, nira lefarish delerabusa nalka chalutza." It appears that the reason that the Mishnah took the case of chalutza is in order to teach me something additional, something extra, a chiddush. Tisagadaita chamina, that I would have thought, kivin de shomeres yavam lo michsura knisa lechupa, since a woman who is in that interim period when her husband has died and left behind no children, and she's waiting to find out whether his brother is going to marry her or not, since a woman in such a position is not lacking knisa lechupa, in other words, that when the man is going to marry her, he doesn't actually have to go through the typical marriage procedure of bringing her into a chuppah, and rather can simply take her into his house as his wife and be with her as his wife. Shaharei, as Tosfos says, Shaharei Yivama Yavo Aleha Baal Karcha, that we know the Pasuk teaches us with the words Yivama Yavo Aleha, that Yivam can be done perforce, against the woman's will. Therefore, Vahava Mina, I would have thought that Kinesu Adamya, that she's viewed as a married woman, Kamash Malan not. Now this Tosfos needs a little bit of explanation. First of all, in terms of the background, there's a concept of Shomeres Yavam. The concept of Shomeres Yavam is that, let us say a man, Reuven we'll call him, dies, leaves behind no children, but he does leave behind a wife who he was engaged to. Which is the case for our purposes, although Shomeres Yavam doesn't have to be a case of engagement, but let us assume for our case, for our purposes, it's a case where he was only engaged, only Kedushin was done. And he does have a brother, Shimon. The woman, until Shimon either marries her and does Yibam, or does the Chalitza process, is in a status called Shomeres Yavam. She's literally watching the Yavam to wait and see what he's going to do. Yavam is a word referring to the brother-in-law, to her late husband's brother. Such a woman, the halacha tells us, the pasuk really tells us, does not require the usual marriage procedures, but rather the brother of the late husband, can marry her simply by being with her as a husband is with a wife, and that action makes her into his wife. That's all she needs. She doesn't require any kinesa l'chup, any entering into a marriage canopy the way normally marriage is done. Which essentially means that the connection between this woman and her brother-in-law is already somewhat formed. And in fact, if you learn Maseches Yevamos, the word they give for this connection is zika, which literally means attachment or chain. That there's some kind of connection that's formed, some kind of a bond that's formed between this brother-in-law and this woman. And because of that, that connection is already somewhat formed, even though if chalitza is done, the brother of the late husband, is never going to be with this woman at all. Nevertheless, we can view her as if she's a married woman. And if she's a married woman, what does that do for us? In other words, why is Tosfos telling us this? Let's say she's like a married woman. What would that matter? So if she has the status of having been like a married woman, like a fully married woman who had done the suin, then she would not get a ksuba of 200. Let's explain for a second. Let us imagine that we have a case of a woman who was married and had done Kedushin and Nisuin. Even if such a woman never ended up being with her husband on her wedding night for whatever reason, and then let's say her husband died, she would still have the status as a woman who doesn't have Tanis Pesulim. A claim cannot be made against her virginity if she then marries later. And she also does not get a ksuba of 200, she gets a ksuba of 100. Therefore, Tosfos is making an extension. Since that's the halacha in that case, I would think that a woman who is a chalutza from Kedushin that had Chalitza done from her brother-in-law when she was in this position of being a Shomeres Yavam, I would think she has the status of being having been a fully married woman, because she was in a position where she didn't need anything more to be done to her in order to be married to this man other than being together with him as husband and wife. Therefore, I would think perhaps that would give her the halachic status as being a fully married woman and give her only the ksuba of 100. The Mishnah is coming and telling you, no, that is not the halacha. She, even in that case, still gets a ksuba of 200 if she then marries later. And it seems Tosfos was bothered why the Mishnah needed to include a case of chalutza, ones that already taught me a case of almana and grusha. Chalutza theoretically should be included, ostensibly it should be no different than either of those two cases. Tosfos is telling us there might be reason to think that it would be different. And therefore the Mishnah needed to teach me that case as well, in order to teach me that additional chiddush, that she is not considered like a fully married woman, despite her not lacking entering into the chuppah. Okay, let's take a look at the Gemara now. The Gemara says, "My almana, what is almana?" Amar Rav Chana Bagdata, Rav Chana from Baghdad said, "Almana al shem mana." She's called an almana because of the mana, the 100 that she receives as her ksuba. So the Gemara asks, "Almana min ha'eres and ma'ikul memar." So if that's the case, if that's the reason she's referred to as an almana, a widow is referred to as an almana, what are you going to say about a woman who's a widow from Kedushin? There's a woman who's a widow from Kedushin, she gets 200. So the Gemara answers, "Aidi daha kari la almana ha nami kari la almana." Since a widow from Nesuin is referred to as an almana, therefore a widow from Kedushin is also referred to as an almana. So the Gemara asks, "Almana d'ksiva b'araisa ma'igla member." What are you going to say about the term almana, which means widow, which is written in the Torah? In other words, the concept of an almana only getting a mana is most certainly derabbanan. Even if the opinion who holds that an almana, that a besula gets 200 and that ksuba is from the Torah, everybody would agree that the ksuba that an almana gets, which is 100, is a rabbinic enactment. So why would the Torah refer to her as an almana if that name came to her because she gets a mana in her ksuba? So the Gemara answers, "Da'asidin rabbanan demesakni lamana," because the rabbis in the future were going to enact for her that she gets a mana when she gets married. That's why the Torah refers to her as an almana, because of the enactments that the rabbis were in the future going to make. The Torah, of course, knew, and therefore the Torah referred to her, a widow, as an almana. So Gemara asks, "Sumi kasav kol asid." Does the pasuk ever write something, refer to something by its future name? The Gemara answers, "In yes, diksiv, as it's written in the pasuk, v'shem hanahar hashlishi chidekel. The name of the third river was chidekel." This is in the very, very beginning of Sefer Bereishis, when there were four rivers coming out of Gan Eden. The third river was referred to as chidekel. And the pasuk goes on to say, "Hu ha'olech kidmas Ashur." That's the one that went east of Ashur. But then Rav Yosef, and Rav Yosef taught, "Ashur zuslika." The place that is referred to as Asher is the place that we know as Sliga. So the Gemara asks, "Sumi Havai, was that place actually in existence that Rav Yosef is referring to?" Ela da Asida. Rather, it was that it was going to be in the future, Hachanami da Asida. So here also, in the case of Almana, it was that it was in the future going to be referred to as an Almana, and therefore the Torah referred to her that way. Let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi is Bagdasar, Dimin Bagdas, who is from the town of Baghdad. Al shem mana, she'im not nises, mishin is almana, ein la ksuba. That if she gets married, then when she gets widowed, she does not have a ksuba. El mana, she only gets that mana. And that's that 100, not a full 200. And that's why she's referred to as an almana. The ksuba be'oraisa, because of the almana that's written in the Torah, ba'adayin lo niskenu ksubas. And at that time, ksuba had not been established at all. Because according to Rashi, it seems to be referencing the fact that there's an opinion that even the ksuba for a basula is a rabbinic enactment. So then the Gemara asked, "Miksiv kra likros al shem davar ha'asid." Does the pasuk refer to nouns that as their future names? So therefore, they brought a proof from Rav Yosef, who said that Asher in the Torah is Zuslika, Shem Ir, which is the name of a city. Umi Havoi Ha'ir Benuya B'Briyas Ha'olam, was the city built in the time of the creation of the world? Iksiv Ha'olech Kidmas Ashur, as it writes, that which goes past the city of Ashur. Rather, it must be it didn't exist. So now that the Gemara brought in that explanation of term from Rav Chana Bagdasa, they're going to bring in other explanations of terms, starting with another one from, in fact, the same Amor of Rav Chana Bagdasa. The Amor of Rav Chana Bagdasa said, Matar rain, mashke marve umezave umaaden umamshech. Gives to drink, and irrigates, and fertilizes, and gives pleasure, and continues to be a continual source of life. Amar Rava Bar Rav Yishmael, and Rava Bar Rav Yishmael says, V'itema Rav Yema Bar Shalmiya. And some say, Rav Yema Bar Shalmiya, Ma'ikra Tlameha Rava Nach Askidudeha, B'revivim Timo Gagna Tzimcha Tzivarech. Which translates to abundantly water its ridges, settle its furrows, with showers you soften it, you bless its growth. So what is that pasuk talking about? Amar Rav Elazar, Mizbeach, Meziach, Umezin, Mechabiv, Mechaper. So it seems that Rav Elazar is really giving a new explanation of where the term Mizbeach comes from. So what can we say that the previous line of Ma'ikra is doing? Rather must be that whoever was this Amor that was bringing in this pasuk was bringing it in as a further indication that rain can be referred to by all these things, because of the fact that the pasuk in Tehillim refers to it in this way and tells us all the things that it does. It irrigates and fertilizes and provides a source of blessing and so on and so forth. Now Rav Elazar is really giving a new explanation for a different word. What does the word Mizbeach come from? So the Gemara says, Meziach umezin mechabev mechaper. That it brings forgiveness, it provides food, it creates love, and also creates forgiveness. So the Gemara asks, Hainu mechaper, Hainu meziach. So the two terms seem to mean the same thing. They both mean the type of various types of forgiveness. So the Gemara explains, Meziach gzeros, it forgives decrees, it kind of wipes away bad decrees against us, and it also creates forgiveness for sins that we've done. And that mechabiv, just to clarify, that love that it creates is a love between us and Hashem. Let's take a look at Rashi to explain some of these terms. Rashi, starting from Meziach, Rashi says, Kosak Adaitach, the Gemara thought at this point, Meziach avonos, that it erases sins. So it would seem to be the same thing. Mezin, bizchos hakarbonos, through the merit of sacrifices, ha'olam nizon, the world is supported, meaning supported in this case, provided with food. Shakarbonos ban min amazon, that sacrifices come from food, v'garmen lo bracha, and therefore caused the thing which it came from, blessing, that the food should be blessed and be many, or be much. Mechabev es Yisrael el aviyim, it causes a love between the Jews and their father in heaven. It's the same thing. What exactly Rashi is accomplishing in that instance, very hard to know. What was bothering Rashi? It seems like the Lashon of the Gemara was bothering him, but he didn't. If that's the case, what he answered is just that they're really the same thing. Okay, going further, Rashi says, Meziach Zeros, Raos, Me'al Yisrael, erases bad decrees from the Jews. So now we have a clear idea of what exactly these terms are. And again, this is all very etymological. It's all discussing the roots of various words. V'omer Rav Chana Bagdita. And Rav Chana Bagdita said further, Tamri, dates. Meshachnan, Mesavan, Meshalshalan, Ma'ashran, V'lom Afankan. So what do all these terms mean? Let's see if Rashi will help us. Meshachnan, Mechalamos, it warms up, it creates a certain sort of warmth in a person's body, which is beneficial. Mishalshal and shalshal, which literally means diarrhea, but what essentially it's saying is that dates help a person's digestion work. Ma'ashran. Machzikos koach, it strengthens a person. Kemo ashro chometz, as the pasuk in Yeshaya, which refers to the word osher, meaning strength. V'lomafankan. And it doesn't create any kind of a negativity. Rashi explains, Einan marbos is to nisa al halev. It does not increase finickiness on the heart. V'kul and shabach. And all these things, these terms in the Gemara, are praiseworthy. In other words, it seems like the Gemara is explaining that dates are a very health beneficially healthy food. The Gemara now goes on to tell us more about dates. Amar Rav, Rav said, Achal Tamarim Al Yoreh, one who eats dates should not paskin. What does that mean? It seems that Rashi says, Al Yoreh, Shum Hora, should not give any psak. Navisha Tordos Daito Kashikr. Because dates make a person's mind confused like a drunk person. So apparently dates sometimes the sweetness, the sugar, creates a sort of a headiness which makes a person unable to focus properly to issue psak. So the Gemara says, Mesave, I'll ask you a question on that idea. I'll tell you the opposite, that a person who eats dates should absolutely be able to paskin. Tamarim shachris va'arvis yafos. Eating dates in the morning and evening is good. It's good for a person. The mincha rose, in the afternoon is bad, meaning the late afternoon. The sarayim, in the early afternoon, ain kamosan. There's nothing like them. Umuvat los shlosh advarim. And they remove three things. Machshava ra, bad thought, v'choli me'ayim, and any intestinal issues a person may have. V'tachtonios. And I believe that's a word which refers to gallstones. Some kind of a blockage that a person might have, the eating dates helps clear that up. So the Gemara says, so it would seem from that, that if it gets rid of machshava ra, bad thought, that would be, after eating dates, would be a great time to paskin. So the Gemara says, lo malu, did we say that they are not beneficial? Alu malu, they're very beneficial. L'vishayta tirda. But temporarily, for a short time, they do create a sort of distraction which prevents a person from being able to paskin. They're no different than beer, damamar. As the master said, it was stated previously, one who drinks a small amount of wine, al yore, should not issue psak. And similarly, I guess the Gemara seems to take it as a given that wine might be beneficial for a person, even though temporarily, on a short-term basis, it will make it difficult for a person to be clear-headed in his thinking. Let's take a look at Rashi here. Shachris v'arvis yafos. Klolz imnolsa. This is the general rule of the matter. La'achar achila. After eating, yafos. They're good for a person. Shachris in the morning. Darken shobani adam pas. Shachris. It's normal to eat breakfast. Kedamar b'hamakabal. Yeah, it says in Hamakabal. Arvis. And in the evening, la'achar achila. After eating dinner, One eats dates. In other words, Rashi is telling us that in general, after eating, dates are beneficial. B'mincha raos, shehin kodem achila, that's before eating supper. La'achar shina satarayim, after the afternoon nap, which was once upon a time a sort of a given in the daily schedule, was that in the afternoon a person took a nap before getting up and continuing the rest of his day. Batsaharayim, la'achar hasuda she'achal v'saveya. After the meal that he ate and was satisfied, after the afternoon meal, ain kimosin is nothing like them. They're wonderful. The tovos yosem is even better than in the evening. Because during the day he's not hindered from going to the fields to use the bathroom. B'chol es yirtzet, any time that he needs. But at night it's a big pain, because especially before the days of indoor plumbing, going to use an outhouse in the middle of the night was certainly no pleasant task. And we quoted this statement that one of the things dates do is they stop negative thoughts. Mevalos machshavaro, daigo, worry. Which again sort of actually dovetails a little bit with the idea that they cause a certain amount of headiness. We know the person who's drunk is typically a lot less worried about anything. In fact, that's why many people drink. Rashi goes on, Fi shemesamchos es halev, they gladden the heart, v'tzaharayim shas over v'tzahalahi. In the afternoon is a time of light and light, another word for sort of lightness. In other words, I guess the idea is that in the afternoon is a time of lifting of mood. A person, you know, there's that 2:30 feeling people sometimes have where they kind of get down. But after that, there's like a second wind that comes and a person gets uplifted and feels gladdened, and dates kind of aid and abet that feeling. Okay, let's continue with this tangent. The Gemara is now going on about the etymological roots and the qualities of various food items. The Gemara says, the Ibai same, and if you want, I'll tell you another answer to the contradiction we brought earlier, are dates beneficial or not? Lo kasha. Hamakami nahama halabasa nahama. One is before bread, one is after bread. Which is goes hand in hand with what Rashi told us before, that dates are beneficial after eating, but before eating, they can be detrimental. Damar Abaye. The Abaye said, Amro li, im tamri mekami nahama, kinargala dikula. Excuse me, Amro li aim. My mother said to me, Tamri mekami nahama, kinargala dikula. Dates before bread are like an axe to a date tree, which certainly is not beneficial for the date tree. Basar nahama, but after bread, ki arva ladasha, are like a beam which supports the door. Rashi explains, ki arva ladasha, machzikas is a guf, they strengthen the body, kivriya chasadelas, like the cross beam supports the door. Dasha, now we're going to explain where the word dasha comes from. Amar Rava. Rava says, derach sham. There's a way over there. In other words, it happens to go together with the idea of a door, because what is a door? A door is essentially through there's a path. So Rava's explaining that's where the word dasha comes from. Darga, which means a level or a step. Amar Rava, Rava said, derech gag, it's the way to the roof. Purya. Where does the word purya come from? Purya refers to a bed which a man and woman are together on. Amar Papa explained, Shaparan Varavanala. It comes from the term that they are multiply or procreate upon it. Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok said, Af Anu Namar, we also said an etymological root. Islandess, the word islandess, which is the way of referring to a woman who is unable to give birth, Duchranus. She's like a male ram, the Loyalada, which does not give birth. She explains, Af Anu Namar, of Anu Nidrash as a shameless, we also explain names. Ma'alash and Islandess, Shekaru Chachamim Le'ishashena Rielele. What is the term Islandess which the Chachamim in various Mishnayas refer to a woman who is unable to give birth? To Chuanus. Lashon El Tamim. It's the term for a complete ram. Dimitargaminan, the Char Shlim. Harehi Ka'ayal, she's like a ram, Shena Yulad, which we know a male ram is not going to be able to give birth. That is the end of the Gemara giving various etymological roots, and the Gemara is now going to continue with a discussion about various types of girls, how old they are, and what type of ksuba they get if they get married. We'll continue with that when we proceed next week. In the meantime, have a good week, everyone. Take care.